Okay. Sorry about the delay. There was no adapter for my laptop here, so that kind of ruined it. Today we'll just go over like the case studies. They're at the end of the slides of yesterday's lecture, and then we can just learn by doing, I guess. So I'll give you some time in the beginning, I don't know, like 10 minutes, just to read over the case study and try and come up with something yourselves, and then I'll start doing it myself. Yeah. This is up on Blackboard, yeah. It's yesterday's lecture, so week 38, I think. What do you mean? Like, you have like some minutes to, if you want to do it yourselves, if you want to, or I can just like start too. It's up to you. You wanna try first? Okay. Yeah, so for the diagram, use something like Shen's notation, yeah. Because, or isn't the assignment in the, don't they ask for Shen? You can choose. Okay. Yeah, then choose between like Shen or Yoma. Doesn't matter. But you should be able to do both. So I'm going to present solutions for both. EML. EML. But maybe it makes more sense to use Shen now just because it seems a bit easier for me. I don't know. It depends. You can do both and see what feels the best, I guess. Or you can alternate between exercises like this one I use EML, this one I use. Yeah, for the future, like no one documents anything anyways, and no one looks at documentation anyway, so you probably won't use either of it's been 10 minutes. Do you have more time or should I start? Yeah, I'll just start. Okay. So the first thing you do with these type of exercises is you just read them. Maybe you like take some notes as you go. But yeah, as you go, like Daniel Boulder, Boulder, whatever, and then you just kind of like you start reading, and then you kind of like start zoning off because you're like, hey, is this really necessary? And the first paragraph is just unnecessary information, so you can just skip And then as you go forward, then you have the organizers record the following information for each race, and then we have race ID, total number of runners registered in the race, actual number of participants, number of female runners, male runners, date of the race, name of the winner, and the woman winner, and the man master, and woman master, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. So the way I usually approach a problem like this is to, as you go and read the exercise, you just write down all the stuff that you need. So you have, like, you talk about having a race, right? They talk about a race, and then they talk about a race ID. This is, if you see case study 2, it's a bit more like by bullet points, so you don't need to do as much like pre-processing of what the problem is. But when it's just a straight like text like this, it takes a bit more effort. So race ID and total number of runners. And online pre-registering, and then number of actual participants, so the people that actually run, participants, and then number of female runners, number male runners. Number of male runners and then we also have like winners, and then we have like the male and female and the master male and the master female. And then the date, yeah, good. And that's it, right, for the race. And then for the participants, we have social security number and name and birthday and gender and address and age and PR. Yeah, is this all of it? I'm going to change to like red, I think. Yeah. So this is all the stuff that we have. So we, as we've seen yesterday, like step one is to just create the entities, and then you take care of like all the rest afterwards. So the entities here look to be just race and a participant. Participant. And if it was UML, then it would just be like race and participant. Yeah. And then we add the attributes for each of them, right? You can tell me what the attributes are for participant. most of that list, right? Yeah. Did you use UML or Shen? Yeah, Shenish. Yeah, that's fair. Like, if you see online, and if you like go to like different reference websites of like this is how we do stuff, you'll find endless variations of the same like notations, like, oh, we use like this slightly different thing to do this, or we do this way. So at the end of the day, as long as it's understandable enough, it's okay, because that's the whole, like, this is documentation, right? This is to make sure you write down like the ideas and the other people understand your ideas. So if you writing it down like specific, like explicitly that, you know, this is a dependent or whatever, instead of using like two ovals, then it's fine. So yeah, for Shenish, then we have like social security number and then name, birth, age, gender, address, age. Doesn't matter. So you always like use the oval for all of them, right? And you just create a nice little bush around the square. One thing though is that here we have both birthday and age, right? So if, let's say, we translate this into a database and we want to like store both information, and if somebody, if you like have a user form in on the online, and the user is in charge of putting both their age and their birth date, and they fuck up, which one do you think is correct, right? Which one is right? Like, with databases, like, it shouldn't be like any of these questions of like what is right or what is wrong. It should just be data, and data should be like empirical. There should be no questions about what the data is or what is the truth. So having both of these fields as just like standalone independent fields doesn't really work, because it can arise to like those type of questions. That's why if you're like registering a user, you usually just ask for their birthday, and then you take care of the rest. If you're going to display their age, you can do some stuff to get like how old they are today or whenever. But that's why you don't just don't ask for somebody's age. So the only difference, like for all these things, is that for age we use the like this, because this is a derived property that gets derived from the birthday, right? So if it's like 5 years from now, the birth date of a person is still going to be the same, but the age is going to be different, so that can just be calculated from the birthday instead. Okay, and then for the race. For the race, did you also put in like all of these different things, or did you take some out? Did you associate any with a relationship, for example, or did you just put all the stuff here around race and that was it? Okay, so you had like some sort of like relationship here in the middle. And then it was like the winners came here. Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. Well, here is when we end up with a bunch of different like options to do all these things, and ends up being just kind of not really, there isn't like one way to do or to represent this stuff. So I can have one way of looking at the data and being like, yeah, obviously it should be like this. And somebody else could just come along and be like, this is stupid. This makes more sense this way. And that's fine, because at the end of the day, whatever this, like, as long as they represent the same thing, it's going to be fine. Like, when you translate that into a database, you're probably going to end up with, like, very similar databases. And even if you don't, like, two databases, two different ways of, like, representing the data would still be, like, valid and useful, right? Hello? No. So, one option is, I'll do the option that was in some lecture notes some years past. So we have participant participant, and then we have like all the other stuff around, right? And then we have race. And then we would have, for the race, we would have, like, the, so the number that are registered, and the number of participants. Participants, whatever, and the number of female, and then the assumption would be if you're not female, then you'll be male, so then you could do this as the derived property of female, and yeah, and then date and whatever. And then so you could do like between participant and race, you could have participation or participant or whatever. And here you'd have like, are you like winner of male, and shit. Fuck me. I'm switching to the computer. Fuck this.
Let me see.
Gonna start bringing my own pens from home. Anyone with the link and copy link. What is this link? I'll just log in. Let me see. How do I log in? Shit. By the way, for these examples, like I started using, what was it, like Creately or whatever, and then I got frustrated in the middle. So then I used Dryo. This also works fine. So yeah, but if you want to use any other software to make diagrams, be my guest. If you want to use Paint, I don't care. And if you find anything that is actually like decent, just tell me, because I haven't found any like UML diagram program that is actually like usable. It's all garbage. So yeah. So here we have a participant plus all the attributes that the participant should have, right? So their birth, whatever, age, and then the participation between is between like a participant and a race. And you have one attribute to say if that participant was the winner in any of the categories in like the specific race that relationship relates to. So here for cardinality, you can see that we have M to N. So that basically means one participant can participate in multiple races, and like a race is going to have multiple participants, right? And then here we have the full what's the official name for this? Let me see. I've also posted links for some good like where everything is written down. It's not really like a cheat sheet, but it's some like documentation websites where you have like everything in one place, so it's easier to search for stuff. So this is a total participation constraint, and this is a partial participation constraint. So this means that not all the participants are involved in the relationship, and this means that all of them are involved, which basically means, say for example, if you have there are no participants or race must be run by runners, but the runner doesn't have to run in the races. If that makes sense. No. It's easier to understand in UML because then you just have this. So cardinality is defined in this way, where you have, so you always take what's the origin that you're setting the cardinality for. So in this case, we'll take like participant, and we'll say for one participant, we can like he's going to race in at least one race, or he's going to participate in at least one race, because then he wouldn't be in the system. Like he's in the system because he registered to be in at least one race. So that we can say that for one participant, he's going to be in at least in one or more races. This is what this means. So you have one to infinity. And then for one race, a race is going to be scheduled for a specific time, right? And then people are going to participate in the race. Maybe nobody signs up, so then you don't have any participants. Maybe like 1,000 people signed up, you don't know. So you can just say that like any or whatever value. So it covers like that range. So for one race, you're going to have like multiple participants. Yeah, it came like close enough to the break. could have waited like 5 minutes. That's fine. So, yeah, this is one possible solution. So we have the participation relationship, and then we just say, like, is it, like, is that participant the male winner for this race or the female winner, blah, blah, blah. We also have this possible solution. So you have one relationship for did the person, like, run in the race? Did the person win? And what type of winner were they? And the rest of the stuff is the same. And this is another solution. So here we have that the number of registered, number of runners, the number of female runners, and number of male runners. I kind of assumed that this can all be inferred by what the participants are in the relationship, right? If you have all these participants and you have that they participate in the race, then you don't need to explicitly have like all those names, so these can be derived. And then for the relationship, we have a participation class, which basically means what is their age, and or is derived from their date of birth and their gender. And we have if they won and if they actually ran. So then from the actually ran, you can see if they were actually, or you can derive like the number of runners, and then you can also derive from this and the gender, the number of male runners and the name of and the number of female runners. So these diagrams are kind of messy, I think, a bit too busy. So I feel like this is a lot more readable to what is going on. So in UML, you just have an entity with the different attributes that they have, and then in front of it, you just put what the type of that attribute is. So is it a string, is it a int or whatever. Here it doesn't actually matter what types you're using. Like if you're comfortable using, I don't know, Java, then just use those. If you're using the types from SQL, then use those. As long as it's like descriptive enough that whoever's reading the diagram can understand what this stuff is, then it's fine. So we have both of the entities. If you have a for UML, when you're listing out the attributes, you can have plus or minus or pound sign or hashtag or whatever we call it. These are like for protection levels in your actual code. So I don't know if you've done like any Java or C++ or Java or TypeScript or any of that stuff. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So always use plus then. That's what it comes down to. You'll understand at a later point what all that stuff is. But I'm not going to explain that now. But yeah, if you ever like come across like UML diagrams that have like these as like attributes, as like the first character in the attribute, just know that it all means the same for this class. Or a further class, hopefully somebody teaches you what the difference is. And then, so we have the name of the attribute, the type. We can signify that it's an ID or the primary key for that table. We can also do it by doing like PK for primary key. Some people also put it before I don't know, do whatever. Just know that you're going to come across all these like different things, and they all mean the same. And for derived properties, they usually just use a slash before. So this is an actual property, this is a derived property. So this means the dashed circle. And then we have a many to many relationship here. You can always label your relationships, so, and it always is done in a way that there's an arrow here that points, so from the left to the right, and participants in the race. You can also label what's both sides of the relationship, so you can do like participates or be like participant and then run in or something. You can always add like more stuff to your diagram, but it's a juggling act between is this like too descriptive and I just like too much text in my diagram that I don't understand anything, or is it enough to for people to understand? It's kind of like writing code. Like, am I going to like put a bunch of comments in this and then just make like a big old file with all these explanations, or can you just read the code and understand it? And then here we have like the relationship or the association class, which is participation. So if we want to add any attributes to a specific association, like participation, then we just do it like this. Yeah? Does that make sense? Any questions? Any stuff that you would have done differently? Or do you don't understand? No? Yeah, take a break then. Sure. We can move along to case study two, I guess. And just to review the stuff from yesterday, we have an entity, right? Which is just a normal, like it would be a table in SQL, just a entity. A weak entity is if it's something that's dependent on something else, like all the time, it doesn't exist in a vacuum, right? So an example of it, for example, is if we have a if we have like a vet clinic and we have pets that are the patients. These pets are always associated with an owner, right? It's always it's always like the owner that brings them in. It's the owner that has created like their a little like a sheet of details. It's the owner that pays. So a pet is always dependent on the owner to be a patient at the vet. That's when you use a weak entity. And when you have that type of relationship, then you use the weak relationship, which is the double diamond symbol as well. Then we have attribute. If that attribute is a key, then you just underline the attribute. If it's a derived attribute, so it's something that also doesn't exist in a vacuum. It's something that is gotten from another attribute or some other calculations, then you use the dashed lines. If it's a multi-value, so if it's something that can have like multiple values, right? So say you're registering a user and they can have multiple phone numbers, then you use the double line as well. Does cardinality of relationships make sense? Or no, not really. To differentiate, because if it would be like end to end, you could assume that it's exactly the same number. Then use two variables because it might not be. Different people have different standards of what they think is acceptable or not. It depends. No, but okay. So these relationships, what they mean is, so one to one is if for every thing in for like one entity, another thing exists, and exactly one thing exists. So let's say, for example, that every professor in this university is in charge of one department, and only in one department can only have one people in charge of it. Then we have like a one-to-one relationship, because for every professor we have exactly one department, and for every one department we have exactly one professor. That is not the case, because there are there are professors that are not in charge of departments. So in that case, then we use this type of relationship that mandates that one of them is mandatory, one of them is not, right? So for, if we take the example of if we take the example of the department, for example, we can see that a professor is the chair of one department, and one department is shared or is managed by one professor, but not all professors belong to this relationship, right? If you would imagine there it would be a table in SQL, not this way. If we would imagine there would be like a table in SQL, then we would have, say this is the professor's table. And then it would have like ID, whatever, and then managers, and then a department ID. So 1, 2, 3, 4, and this would maybe be null, null, then 2, and then 3. So when you have like the two, when you have one line, it means not everything, not every professor is going to manage one department, right? Some of it can, some of those records, if you're translating into to database terms, would be null. If it's the other way around, so if, say, we turn this around and we make like this relationship on the department table instead, and we would have ID and then the professor ID that measures it. This column would not allow for null. So null would not be, like, be allowed here, because every department is going to require at least one professor to manage it. So then that is the difference between the two and the one lines. Does that make sense a bit more? So here, one line, here, two lines. Yeah? And then for the end-to-end relationships, when you have, I'll take this away. When we have just, if one thing can correspond to multiple things, then you have a one-to-n relationship. So in the context of this class, I'm the professor somehow, and you're all the students. I'm one individual professor and I have a bunch of students, so that's a one-to-n relationship. If there are multiple people teaching this class, there would be an N-to-M relationship. Then it's N-to-M because, you know, you might be like two or three professors and it would be, I don't know, 40 or 50 of you, except for N classes. Does that make sense? Yeah? Does that make a bit more sense? Ish? Yeah. Okay. We'll see. Yeah. So case study two. You can just. Okay. Should I just do it, or do you want to try doing it yourselves? I'm just worried about time because it's like, yeah. Okay. I'll read along, and then when I'm done reading, I'll start. But I won't read it out loud because that's annoying. I'll start then. So identify the entities first. I'll do this one in YAML because it's easier. So we can take like professor, and then we can do projects, and then the grad students, and then departments. Any other entities in this? In this case, yeah, it depends on the interpretation of what you or what the exercise is. It could be like a different entity altogether. It could be it could just be like a self relationship. But yeah, in this case, we'll just do the, it's a self-relationship. So a graduate student overlooks another graduate student. If, how do you differentiate then? Then you might need like another field that says like seniority. They would like differentiate like the graduate students that are like senior enough to be advisors or not, but that is true, but like how the, yeah, here it's kind of like interpretation of the exercise. What does that mean? Is there like the seniorist graduate student that is like the advisor for every other graduate student? And in this case, like when I was solving the exercise, I just assumed there's senior graduate students and there's non-senior graduate students. And some of them like don't have an advisor. With these type of exercises, if there's any like any ambiguity to what you think the exercise is asking, or you're like this doesn't make any sense, then you just write your assumptions of like, given the exercise, I thought that, you know, a graduate student would be, you know, there would be senior and junior graduate students. Because, and that's also what happens in real life, where you kind of like have to fill in the gaps, because your client is also not going to like have the full picture, or just going to give you like actual parts of what the whole like domain is. And then you just need to like figure out yourself, fill in the gaps, and then go back to them and be like, hey, this is what I understood of your explanation. And then they can be like, oh, perfect. Or they can be like, totally wrong. It's when, and this is the reason why none of you or like the computer people are not going to be out of a job anytime soon or be replaced by AI, is because then you're going to have to have the clients be perfect and understand exactly what their needs are and explain it to a computer. That is never going to happen. So, but yeah, then we take professor and we have a social security number and we have, what the f- no, whatever. And we have the name, and we have the age, and the rank, and the research specialty, right? We can all agree that all of those should become attributes of the professor, right? And then we need an ID, or we don't need an ID, but we should have an ID. And in this case, we can just use a social security number because that is going to be unique, right? Then we have projects. So project should have a project number, a sponsor name, starting date, ending date, and the budget. So again, those are all attributes. This is made like a bit easier because it's already like explained in a way that it makes it like a bit easier to just come up with the result. Then graduate students, social security number, and all this other stuff. Again, all of them are attributes. And then each project is managed by one professor, known as the project's principal investigator. So this is like the first relationship, right? So we have projects, and then we have professors. And then a project should be managed by one professor, and exactly one professor. So if we scroll down to the UML here, we just see project. So we have professor and all the stuff, project and all their attributes, and then manages. So we have one professor that manages a project, and one professor can manage multiple projects, right? And then if you see the relationship the other way around, one project is managed by exactly one professor, right? So to understand how that works, you always like start at the box here, and you go like one project is managed by one professor. And then when you do that, you always like ignore the number that is on that side. So you always say like one project is managed by one professor, and then you fill in the gaps of like, and one professor can manage zero or more projects. So then you have the star sign. Does that make sense? Yeah? And then each project is worked on by one or more professors, which are known as the project's co-investigators. So one project is worked on by one or more professors, and then one professor can work on multiple projects, or it can work on no projects as well, because maybe just teaches or whatever. And then we have professors can manage and or work on multiple projects. So one professor can work or manage multiple projects, right? Star sign. And then each project is worked on by one or more graduate students. So one project is worked on by one or more graduate students, and one graduate student can work on however many projects they want, maybe none. So then it's labeled, this is the label, so always follows like the direction of the arrow. Here it could maybe be like a down arrow. That doesn't, as long as it's understandable, but a project is worked on by graduate student. And then in the graduate student, we have all the attributes for the graduate student. And departments have a department number, department name, and main office. Departments have a professor known as the chairman who runs the department. Professors work in one or more departments, and for each department that they work in, a time percentage is associated with their job. Usually when something is phrased this way, you need to add an attribute to the relationship, which is what we've done. So we have a department that is shared by a professor can share zero or one departments, so they can either be a chair of a department or not, right? and a department has to be managed by one professor, and then one professor can work on multiple departments, at least one, and one department has multiple professors working in it. Here I put one to multiple because if a department doesn't have any professors, I'm guessing it doesn't exist. But again, just an assumption from reading the exercise. And then here we have the time percent that is associated with the professor working in the department, right? So for every one of those relationships, we have a attribute that gives you how much that professor works for each of the departments. A good way to think about these sort of like attributes for a relationship is if you think about them as like SQL tables. Let's try again. So if you have a table that is called like time percent of a professor, and that would have a reference to the professor and the department they work in. So you'd have like professor one, professor two, then maybe professor one again, and professor one works in department two and three, and the professor two works in department like one. To represent a relationship with attributes, you'd end up with like another row that would be like time percent. And this could be like 100 and then 40 and then 60. So this is how you'd represent that in a database, if that makes sense. So it's not only just a relationship, but it also has like some sort of attribute to it that gives it a bit more information about what is going on. Yeah. Was that understandable enough? If at least, yeah. Okay.
And then
so graduate students have one department, one major department, which they are working for in their degree. So we have a graduate student is assigned to exactly one department, and then one department can have multiple graduate students. And then each graduate student has another more senior graduate student who advises him or her what courses to take. So then we have one advisor can have multiple advisees, and one advisee will have exactly one advisor. How will that work in practice? Yeah, I don't know. If there's always like one more senior person, how will you end up? How is that going to work? But yeah, this has been the way that this exercise has been solved, both by me and by whoever solved the exercise last year. So, do the same in the exam if this shows up, I guess. Any questions about case two? It's kind of like straightforward when you just have like the bullet points and you just like, oh, do this. I probably won't give you an exercise like that in the exam. No, it depends. Because that's also more work for me, because then I have to like take into account all the interpretations. Then I'm going to have to answer to a lot of emails of like, oh yeah, but I solved it this way because I was thinking this and this. So maybe I'll just make it like super straightforward so I don't have to take care of anything. We'll see. And then for Shen, it looks this, it's this beautiful thing. So, yeah, it's a lot of moving around the boxes until they like fit in a proper, like, good way that it doesn't make it look like a mess. Do I need to go over this? Or can you just look at it afterwards? Silence means no. Okay. Case three, because we have 15 minutes and I want to go over it. Fucking 200% E. Everybody read the exercise? Yeah. Okay. So first thing I do is usually just take away like all the garbage that they put in the exercise. So like take this away, take this away, and then none of this is actually pertinent. And then you end up with like customer, and then you have like customer identification number, name, and address, and telephone number, blah blah blah. And then when you do this, then you have like pet and then pet name and birth date and all this stuff. So that already like saves you a bit of work from just having to interpret the text all the time if you're trying to fix stuff. But yeah, so here you can see that we have so customers and then identification number, name, address, telephone number, email address. So these are all like attributes of the customer. So it's straightforward. And then we have stuff for pet. So pet name and the type and a birth date. You can see right here that there's no single identifier for the pet. There isn't like a pet ID or something, and then and the pet name isn't really something that is going to identify just one pet alone, because yeah, pets have repeat names. Everybody names their cat the same way almost. So that is already a good indicator that it'll maybe, at least in Shen's notation, is going to be a child or a double lined rectangle. It's going to be a weak entity, right? Because there's nothing that just solely identifies a pet. It's being identified through their owner. And then we have, in addition, for each pet, a history of the visits to the doctor is kept. And then for each visit, the date, type of service offered, additional comments, and payment is recorded. Then we can see that we have detailed records about all the doctors, blah, blah, blah. And then they have ID and a name and an address, gender, area specialization, and degree. And then there's also data about prescriptions. So name of the pet, name of the doctor, description, name of the medication, quantity recommended by the doctor. When you have exercises like this, then if it references already something in another entity, like name of the doctor, that's like a good indicator that it's going to be a relationship there. And then a pharmacy that has an inventory that has all the information recorded about this stuff. So for Shen's notation, so we have customer and then all the attributes, and then it has at least one pet. Has to have like at least one pet, because no customer is going to the vet without a pet. That'd be kind of weird. And each pet has to have at least one like customer that it's associated with, unless it's like a stray or something. But then, yeah, you kind of have to account it for it from the beginning. And then a pet visits a doctor and has like all this different stuff associated with the visit. The doctor has all the attributes that were described in the exercise. Then the pet and the doctor are associated with prescriptions. So we have a prescription that has like a description and amount. They should be connected. And then here we have a prescription associated with a customer and with a medication. Maybe not the best way to do this actually, but yeah. If we skip over to UML, I actually didn't finish this. Okay, I'll finish it before I publish it. So we have a pet that is associated with a doctor, and here we have like all the information about the visits that they're doing, that the pet has done to that specific doctor. And then we have the relationship between the customer, the prescription, and the medication. So the customer buys medication that is associated with a prescription. And then we have a pet that is prescribed something by a doctor. And there should probably be another connection here that is also involved with like the medication. So we have like the medication associated with the prescription. It's like this. For the new thing here is ternary relationships, and the only tricky thing there is the cardinality of them. So like what number do you put in when you have like all these like three relationships going on? And if you, there's a method to go about it that makes it like not super hard to figure out. Oh, by the way, if you have relationships, like three-way relationships like this, you always need to have the diamonds in UML. If you just have like a binary relationship, like you have there with like a customer and pet, you can just have a line, that's okay. You can also put a diamond in between, but it's not necessary. If you have like three, at least three or more tables, then you need to put that connector to make it apparent or more understandable that that's a three-way relationship. So there we have a relationship between prescription and, or we can have a relationship between prescription, customer, and medication, right? So if a customer is buying some medication from the pharmacy, that is going to be associated with like the prescription, and the prescription vice versa is associated with the customer and the medication. So the way you think about it is the same, where you kind of start with the box that you want to assign a number to. So we have, right? So we have the customer, and then we need to think how many pairs of prescription and medication is a customer going to get. So if you're getting like a prescription from the pharmacy, you can only do it once per time that it was prescribed, right? So then you add like a one next to the customer box, because you can only buy a medication associated with a prescription once. And then for prescription, how many prescriptions can be redeemed by a customer for a certain medication? That's infinite, because you know they can, you can renew or your prescription with the same medication. So then you add like a star sign next to prescription, because the customer can just go and buy the same medication like multiple times. And then for medication, how if you take the customer and prescription pair, there's always one prescription is always going to be associated to just one customer, right? You're not going to have one prescription that belongs to multiple customers, or multiple customers that have like the same prescription. Like the doctor always writes a new note, so then you have the one next to medication. Yeah. Does that make sense? How you like add the numbers to this stuff? Okay. Cool. Have a nice weekend then.